All right.
You may be seated. Our next case is 2021-913, State of Ohio versus Davis Anthony Hill. For the appellant, Mr. Cartwright Jones.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Madam Chief Justice, Counsel, and may it please the Court, my name is Reese Cartwright Jones, bar number 78597, arguing for Davis Anthony Hill. Could I please reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal?
Proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. So we are asking this court to apply its relatively recent holding in State versus Beasley to a case in which a trial court, taking a plea, declined to take a no-contest plea on the grounds that it would open the gates to appeals ad infinitum, and the court, as the judge said, would never get any work done. Now, I am proposing by way of analysis under the syllabus holding and relatively concise opinion of Beasley for this court to kind of zero in on the facts and circumstances analysis of abuse of discretion. Beasley suggests that a trial court abuses its discretion in declining to take a no contest plea if it does not consider the facts and circumstances of the proposed plea, and if it, I guess, declines to exercise discretion rather in view of exercising a blanket policy. Now, there are some distinctions that I'm prepared to address, of course. The blanket policy in Beasley, of course, was we do not accept no contest pleas at all. And an important distinction in Beasley, I would propose, is that there was no objection from the prosecution in the Beasley decision, with a recommendation from both litigants' counsel, the court said, I will not accept a no contest plea. Now, in this case, we have an objection, albeit a brief one, not stating basis in two plea places, once in a transcript reflecting the offer of the plea, and then once in a transcript taking the plea itself, where the prosecution says, I object. In both those occasions, the court says, I won't accept a no-contest plea, and on one occasion references its ruling on two motions to suppress that I think subsumed really four issues, and said, I think the jurisprudence behind these decisions is sound, so I'm not going to accept a no-contest plea to allow an appeal on those.
Counsel, didn't we say in Beasley that the court has to, any court, has to consider the facts and circumstances of the case and other, you know, evidence prior to sentencing?
Yes, absolutely. And
didn't this judge say that's what he did?
So, kind of. I think
that's what the appellate court found.
So, I think what we have is we have two statements. First of all, I rarely allow no contest pleas except for certain circumstances. The judge does not make a record of what circumstances those were. And then B, that when the trial court says of the obvious purpose of a no contest plea to appeal the suppression rulings, I think the jurisprudence behind these suppression rulings is sound, and essentially I'm not going to allow further appeal. So I think there are a couple of things, and if we really zero in on that Beasley holding, the facts and circumstances holding, I think we wind up with analysis very much like the amicus brief suggests, something along the lines of Federal Rule 11F, that a trial court is to consider the positions of the litigants and, of course, the public interest in allowing a no-contest plea.
Counsel, just to clarify, this was a plea to the indictment. Correct.
No, this was a this was in fact a negotiated plea.
Okay, so did the state make it a condition that they that a no contest plea was not acceptable in this negotiated plea?
Yes. In two places, the prosecution objected or said, we would object to a no contest plea. Now, I want to zero in.
So what argument did he make about why he should be allowed to plead no contest?
So when the court addressed the defendant two times, I think it is apparent that the purpose of a no contest plea was to preserve review of the...
Different to say you think it's apparent. What was argued?
You know, to that end, I would point that the only discussion is with Davis himself. There is no discussion or argument among counsel. And I think I would point to a part of the decision in U.S. versus Davis, where I don't think we can require the litigant himself to express his interest in a no contest plea with the elocution of an Oxford Don. Though I do think it is apparent.
Well, the attorney certainly was there. He's not a potted plant. He could have jumped in and proffered an argument.
I agree. And the statement, particularly in the offer transcript, is we want to preserve the right to appeal these suppression decisions.
What were the suppression issues? I didn't get that from the briefs.
Those are pretty unique. And we have the first motion to suppress, which deals with probable cause back of a warrant. But back of that, we also have a tracking warrant. Now, there's some discussion over proper service of the tracking warrant, but let me just open the concept of the tracking warrant at all. Surveillance law is a developing concept, particularly when it comes to vehicle tracking, cell tower tracking, data tracking of all kinds. And I think that really opens up the concern of this is certainly on that public interest element or on the litigant interest element, something we'd like to review. Also, on the trial court's analysis in the trial court's judgment entry on the motion to suppress, she says, and I'll quote it, or I guess I'm going to have to paraphrase it, the warrant was fairly secure or fairly sure that buys were going on relative to this property. Now, one of the big issues that was raised in that first motion to suppress was, even though there was a warrant to search the home, everybody agrees that there were no buys made from the home. I think at best, you can say that these buys occurred tangent to the perimeter of a home. The other thing that I want to point out is that on the two warrants that are backed by affidavit, those are reviewed de novo by the trial court and by any reviewing court thereafter. So I find it a little hard to say there's just no justiciable issue following these motions to suppress. Now, one of the questions, and I have to apologize because it really hasn't been addressed before the Fifth District and here, is the distinction in Beasley, where Beasley has a prosecutor's concession to a no contest plea and we have an objection. And I think we unpack that from the plain text of Criminal Rule 11A, where it is a rule that invites the consent of the court but does not open it up to the discretion of the prosecution, so to speak.
And counsel, in Beasley, didn't they plead to the indictment?
Beasley, right.
So your client could have pled to the indictment, and it would seem strange for the judge to say, I'm not going to accept that because you want to use that as a mechanism to challenge the suppression issues.
I would agree with that, and it's interesting because in the plea colloquies, the possibility of an open no contest plea to the indictment isn't explored, and I think that tends against discretion because the court describes really only three possibilities. The last one, of course, being trial, but never a no contest plea to the indictment. So let me zero in on the stated basis, because I think if we're looking at abuse of discretion review, stated basis is what we need to focus on. The court expressed a judicial economy concern, appeals ad infinitum. So I think an appeal from a no contest plea is going to be lean, narrowly tailored. We're now just looking at the suppression issues. An appeal from a trial, which was the court's other stated option, invites massive post-conviction review, certainly a much larger appeal than would be on a couple of suppression judgments. To put it somewhat colloquially, if you want appeals ad infinitum, then those would emanate from a trial, not from a no contest plea. So I think if the amicus brief advocates a test, But I think we already have the test in Beasley. It's, you know, balance the facts and circumstances of the case. Now, I suppose we can draw guidance to the facts and circumstances of the case from the public interest and the litigant's interest. So, you know, I understand we have a prosecutor's objection, but again, I think that factors into the facts and circumstances of the case. I don't think it's a sine qua non. I don't think it. I don't think it's an absolute barrier to a no contest plea either.
Well, why not? I mean, if the state's negotiating with your client and your client's seeking to benefit, obviously some degree of leniency in the result of what's going to take place. What you're saying is, and they object to it being a no contest plea, otherwise you have to either go to trial or plead to the indictment. It's like you're saying, well, I want the benefit, and I also want to take my chances of getting it suppressed up at the Court of Appeals.
I understand. So there are a couple of possibilities, one of which is that an open no contest plea was never explored. But I think the second possibility, too, is just that plain text of Criminal Rule 11A. I don't see it as an incredible affront to negotiated pleas, to the intents of the parties, or to the administration of the justice, if the court were to say, you know what, I am exercising my discretion under Criminal Rule 11A to accept this as a no contest plea. It sounds a little unusual because we're so
Okay, so maybe a court could have done that, but why should a court have to do that? I mean, 11A, I mean, the first line of 11A, a defendant may plead not guilty, not guilty by reason of insanity, guilty, or with the consent of the court, no contest. That with the consent of the court has to mean something.
I agree entirely. And I am not before this court advocating that there is no circumstance under which a court could decline a no contest plea. I think, for example, in scenarios that I'd come up with in balancing public interest, for example, if the prosecutor had said in a slightly different kind of case, I object. We have, for example, child victims, we have longstanding trauma, and we have a real interest in finality here. In this case, we have a drug case with some really interesting suppression issues that I would say really merited review. I would defer to any further questions from the bench or reserve my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Ms. Nemes?
Good morning, Chief Justice. May it please the court. Lisa Nemes on behalf of the Stark County Prosecutor representing the state of Ohio. I want to start off by acknowledging what's not in dispute here. And there is no dispute that a judge is required to exercise proper discretion when denying or declining to accept a no contest plea. And there's also no dispute that it's improper for a judge to have a blanket or fixed policy of refusing no contest pleas.
Let me ask you a question, counsel. Were there any discussions of no contest plea in the negotiations?
The record reflects that at the conclusion of the second suppression hearing, the judge brought up the issue of discussing the plea because they were nearing trial.
Right.
And at that point in time, defense counsel referenced the fact that she had had an off-the-record discussion, and it appears that the court might have been involved to some degree and was aware of the fact that the state was making this offer contingent on a guilty plea and that a no-contest plea would not be an option here. And at that point, the judge confirmed what the offer was from the state and gave the defendant an opportunity to consider. And the following
let me ask, was that the judge made it clear that the defendant would not be able to enter a no contest even to the indictment?
The defendant never made a request to enter. There's nothing on the record that indicates that the defendant ever requested to plead no contest to the indictment.
Okay.
It appears that the consideration here was he was inclined to go forward with the state's offer because of the significant reduction in the sentence. So if
you think that this case turns on that? I mean, can you tell me if the defendant really wanted to address these appellate issues regarding the suppression? Do you think the court, under what type of discretion would a trial court judge have, or what policy to say, even I rarely take no contest pleas to the indictment? Do you believe the trial court would have abused its discretion in that particular case?
I don't want to speculate as to what the judge would have done. I know that this is not a judge that in particular does have a blanket policy. That's an incorrect statement. So if the defendant had said anything, you know, if counsel had raised any issues, even so far as indicating that that was in fact the reason that he wanted the no contest plea was because he was adamant about appealing these pretrial rulings, perhaps the discussion would have been different. This isn't a case where there was a blanket policy where the judge expressed anything that would have made it seem like it would be futile for the defendant to say, here's what I really want. I think I need to have these issues reviewed.
Well, counsel, let me ask this. This is a quote from the transcript. This is from the judge. In this particular case, I feel very confident in the court's rulings on the various motions to suppress and issues that have been raised prior to trial in this matter. And for that reason, I would not be inclined to accept a no contest plea in this particular case. Close quote. Now, is the trial judge allowed to be the appellate court?
No, Your Honor. But
And wouldn't it be more inclined that if the judge was very set in his or her belief in what they ruled at trial, go ahead, take it up on appeal. I'm going to be proved right.
Well,
instead of the other way around.
I think that that relates to the statement that the judge made about we'd never get any work done. And I think it was the judge indicating that she exercises her discretion and when she believes that there is something that warrants an expedited appellate review, in those cases she would be inclined to grant it, but not.
So it's a policy that when she's not sure about her decisions, she's going to let it go up on a no contest plea. But when she's sure, she has a policy, she's not going to grant a no contest.
I think her policy would be that she's going to exercise her discretion based on the particular circumstances of the case that's before her.
But doesn't that allow her to kind of unilaterally preclude appellate review of some legal decisions?
Only if the defendant didn't still have the option to take it to trial, if he really wanted to explore those issues on appeal.
Yeah, but isn't that, from a policy standpoint, isn't that a waste of time and resources, particularly if, I mean, there's obviously no issues that the defendant or his counsel can think about to appeal during the trial. It hasn't happened yet. But as defense counsel stated, you will then get a panoply of assignments of error, not only for the suppression, but anything during trial. Isn't that a waste? The judge talked about it, never get any work done. That seems like not a good use of the court's time.
Well, I think that would be looking at issues, and even though this isn't an issue that was directly raised in this appeal, but you know there could be some debate about whether there were any merits to an immediate review of the suppression rulings in this particular case. But I think it does serve some judicial economy to say if the state is offering this no contest plea this guilty plea to you, this offer for this particular sentence, we're not also going to mix in allowing this
but
to go up on appeal.
But on the flip side, then the defense could also say is, you know, I think this is problematic, the obtaining of this evidence, and that it should be suppressed. But if it's not suppressed and goes to trial, it doesn't look good for me. And so we don't go to trial if it doesn't get suppressed.
Right. And I think the judge is probably in the best position to look in a particular case to determine whether the evidence that was to be suppressed, what kind of an impact.
Why the trial court judge as opposed to three appellate judges?
Well, at that point, if we're going to say that in every situation that a defendant asks for a no contest plea in order to appeal a pretrial evidentiary ruling, that really eliminates the judge's discretion. The judge doesn't have any choice then but to consent, essentially. You know, if there was a pretrial ruling that wasn't favorable to the defendant, the trial judge would not have the opportunity to look at it and say, I don't think that this warrants immediate appellate review. You know, as we know, there are occasions when pretrial rulings can be appealed, and even if the defendant is partially vindicated, that it may not have an overall impact on the defense that he would have presented had
he
gone to trial.
But isn't that up to the appellate court to decide, not the trial court?
Once it's within the jurisdiction of the Court of Appeals, yes.
The idea is here to prevent appellate jurisdiction.
I don't think the judge made several statements on the record that if he was, if in fact that was the reason for this, if he wanted to preserve his appellate rights.
I just read what the judge said.
Right, but she advised him that he could still go to forward with the trial. That she was prepared to go forward with the trial. That was still an option for him, and reminded him he could preserve any appellate issues if he were to take that route. And he declined to do so because. My reading of the record is that he felt it was too risky to go to trial because of the potential sentence he might face and wanted to take advantage of the state's offer.
Counsel, let's assume
it was a trial tax?
No. The judge didn't make anything conditioned on this. It was just that the state's offer was only conditioned on a guilty plea.
When he did not receive the sentence that he bargained for, though, did he?
He did, yes.
He did, okay.
Yes.
So let's assume that the comments by the judge may have been improper in terms of assessing the strength of the suppression issues. I mean, he still negotiated for a sentence, and one of the conditions that you had placed on it, either clearly on the record or implicit in the negotiation, was you have to plead guilty. We're not accepting a no contest plea to that, right?
To be clear, it wasn't asked if that was a possibility to the indictment, though. That wasn't something that the defendant had inquired about to the trial court. So just if the state's offer.
If the defendant, do you believe if the defendant wanted to plead to the indictment in order to take those issues up, you'd have a right to object to that?
I believe that he's essentially waived that issue because if he would have requested that on the record, we would know then what the judge would do, and we wouldn't be in a position to have to speculate. If he'd made that request and she still denied it and said, absolutely, under no circumstances, I don't care how strongly you feel about your issues, this isn't appropriate for a no contest plea. But that didn't happen here, so it's difficult to say how she could have abused her discretion. In appellant's brief, they're essentially mischaracterizing her statements as a blanket policy. This isn't a blanket policy. It may be a policy that she tends to review these to assess merit, but it's not a fixed policy. It's not a policy that says, I never accept no contest, please. So
she said rarely.
She did say rarely. And the definition of rarely, I guess that would depend on how many trials she actually has and how many she allows them in.
Clarify this for me. The state made an offer that was contingent on pleading guilty. And so did the defendant reject that offer and then just plead no contest? Or say, I want the state's offer, but I want to plead no contest?
The latter. His counsel indicated that he wanted to take the state's offer but plead no contest.
But can't then the state say that's not our offer?
The state did, yes.
So why isn't that taken off the table? I guess I'm thinking if the state says we'll offer you this, we'll nolly this, we'll recommend this much time if you plead guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, we'll accept your offer if we can plead no contest. If you say, the state says, no, that's not our offer, no contest is not on the table, I don't see how it gets to the judge.
The judge had the plea discussion on the record after the suppression hearing. I think it was the proximity to the upcoming trial date that she wanted to make sure everything was clearly conveyed to the defendant on the record. So
if the defendant said, I want to plead no contest to this, and you say, or your colleagues say, Your Honor, that's not the state's offer, We're conditioning our offer strictly on a plea of guilty, then can the court then just say, then I don't have anything before me, or you either plead guilty or I can't accept your no contest offer or won't accept it because that's not what the state says for its plea?
Oh, yeah, I don't believe she was under any obligation to offer her explanation. She did choose to offer it, but there's no obligation in Criminal Rule 11 that if a judge.
So it sounds like you're saying to me there was never any meeting of the minds between the two sides.
Only that the defendant was fully aware that the state was not going to be inclined at any point, regardless of whether the judge would or would not accept no contest pleas to offer it on this case.
But of course,
He's before the defendant's before the judge, she's going into, what she needs to say to someone who's, just about to plea, the Rule 11. And the defendant knows that the deal is he pleads guilty, right? But then the judge starts talking about alternatives. I mean, it's not out of the, you know, it certainly would seem to me that he's thinking, okay, there's another path here, because the judge is asking me about this.
It was raised by his counsel. His counsel brought it up at the end, when the plea discussion first came up at the end of the suppression hearing, and the following day she had a hearing offer to clarify that she was not, that the state did not offer that, and she was not going to accept a no contest plea.
Okay.
That's when she gave the explanation, and he was reiterating through counsel that he wanted to make the deal on the no contest plea. So she was clarifying that that wasn't going to happen, that that wasn't an option.
But her reasons for it were about her, wasn't about weighing the case or any of the factors. She said, when the court will take a no contest plea, when I believe there is a legitimate issues to be raised on appeal. So she's placing in her own mind, only if I feel there's a legitimate issue. And then she goes on to say, but I feel very confident in my rulings on the motion to suppress. So it was very clear the defendant wanted to challenge her rulings on the motion to suppress, which is why he wanted the no contest plea. And the only thing she was looking at is not a series of factors, it's the protection of her own rulings. I feel very confident that I'm right.
I do think that even though he hasn't specifically stated that that was the purpose, that he wanted to appeal those rulings, that was the judge's assumption, and I think it's a fair assumption. It's fairly obvious from the record. But, I think that to some extent, the judge is exercising her discretion, her judicial discretion. It's not necessarily a personal discretion, in examining whether or not this is an appropriate case to consent to a no contest plea.
But even if it's a judicial discretion, it's so we would have to find an abuse of that based on the reasonings she set forth on the record.
Correct. And there wasn't, other than saying in appellant's brief, other than stating that this was a blanket policy, there's not another specific argument articulated here to say how this was otherwise arbitrary, because
you don't find the defendant sufficiently argued abuse of discretion. You said they're just argued blanket policy. This is no blanket policy, so they lose.
I think that there was no other argument asserted. So if we're talking about then the discretion that a trial court has in rejecting a no contest plea, it would have to be a scenario where we're saying now, even though that was not it wasn't a proposed rule here, that a trial court can't exercise their discretion to say that they are no longer, they can't say that they're able to base this on the merits or a review of the facts and circumstances of that case if they pertain to a pretrial evidentiary ruling. Mm. If that makes sense.
Thank you.
I see I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel?
Thank you. So,
what about Justice Stewart's question? Is there anything in your brief to support that you did something other than the blanket policy to support a finding of an abuse of discretion?
Yes, I would equate blanket policy in the decision that we've been discussing with a discussion before the trial court that says, I only do these if I find subsufficient legal basis. Or I think the way to summarize that would be, I will only allow a motion to suppress I will only allow a no contest plea, blanket statement, when I have some doubt in my own analysis. And I think that equates to never.
But counsel, let me follow up on Justice Stewart's question about this plea was conditioned on the fact that your client plead guilty. Okay. I mean, when you have a negotiated plea agreement, both sides are looking for a benefit. The state wants finality to the case. They're offering you leniency, which you received. It was resolved. Why should the defendant, in spite of the state's objection and condition of that plea, allow you to proceed no contest and take those matters up. Now, some people might argue that's a too coercive on the state, but you know, that's what happened here. Perhaps the judge's remarks about her policy were were an error, but you received the benefit of your bargain in this case.
So I agree that there is an objection. I don't agree that there is a condition. And more than that, I don't agree that the trial court based its decision on the prosecutor's objection. The trial court didn't even acknowledge the prosecutor's objection and went into the discussion of her own policy that we have discussed quite a bit. But again, all we have is, well, we would object to a no-contest plea. Well, there are plenty of objections that go on in trial courts to various things that trial courts overrule and go the way they're
going. So you say, the state never said that's not our deal? That's not what we offered?
I don't see anything in there that says this is strictly conditioned on a guilty plea, period. They say we object in the offer transcript, and again, we object in the final plea transcript. There is not an if-then proposition in either of those transcripts. And I think that comports best with the black letter of Criminal Rule 11A, which says, with the court's consent, you can enter a no-contest plea. The word prosecutor does not appear in the rule.
Well, the prosecutor can make an objection, and the court has to should consider what the state position is when exercising the consent.
Oh, and I agree entirely. I think that the prosecutor's objection factors into the facts and circumstances analysis of Beasley, just as does the defendant's stated interest.
But you don't equate the state's objection to saying this was a part of our deal. Our deal said plead guilty. Or else they could have just said, Your Honor, we take the deal off the table because it was supposed to be guilty.
At that point, I think I think the appropriate task for the trial court would be to engage a meetings of the mind analysis. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshal, will you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.